Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are. Shalom Aleichem, Assalamu Aleichem, Namaste, Patx, Satnam, Sat Sri Akal, Tashi Dalek, Ho, Lila Tanyan, Wase Yake. Hello, may everything be well with you, as it is with me. Welcome to Wednesday's Shir on Neil Sabbatean Post-Lurianic Kabbalah. And we have been studying over the last few sessions the subject of what soul is and the levels of soul and how that fits into the broader subject of Devakut, which is a mystical union between the mind or soul of the seeker of God, the mystic, if you will, and the mind or soul with God, the divine mind, the divine soul. We will continue on that today, but first, as I do at the beginning of every shir, I will recite the Kaddish for the dead and the mourners of the dead. So please close your eyes as you listen and remember someone to whom you are close who has passed away. In doing so, you'll honor that person's life and bless his or her memory with the light of your own consciousness. Yishkadal v'yishkadash me'rabo, bomo divero kirase, v'yamlik melkase, v'kayakon uvye makon, uvkaye dekol beis Yisrael, ba'agalo uvizman koriev ve'imru omein. Yehesh me'rabo mavorak le'olam ule olme omayo, yisbarak v'yistabak v'yisparar v'yisramam, v'yisnase v'yishadar v'yisala v'yishalal, sh'medukadsho berikhu, La'elo minko berkaso veshoroso tush bakoso venekamoso da'amiron beomo veimru omen. Yehe shlomo rabo min shamayo vekayim olenu ve'al kol yisrael veimru omen. Ose shalom bimromov hu yeshe shalom olenu ve'al kol yisrael veimru omen. Thank you very much. Now let me check our recording levels to make sure we're not over-amping the system, and yet you can still hear me. Looks like we're doing pretty well on that front. Okay. Now, as I said, we've been talking about levels of soul and about Devakut, and in our last shir, I talked pretty extensively about the five levels of soul and how they each one of those levels of soul corresponds to one of the five universes or world through which the eternal transcendent principle or Ein Sof, a totally transcendent, totally ethereal, totally spiritual concept that we have of God, the God who is not manifest in the world, but is outside the concept of time, can't even say prior to creation, for time does not even apply to Ein Sof, which Ein Sof means without end, by which Ein Sof manifests himself in descending stages of creation. These are the five worlds that we talked about. And we talked about how, and those five worlds are Adam Kadmon, the infinite unity, and in the shape and in the image of God, which is Adam Kaman means primordial man, as we are taught in Genesis 1:26 and 27, God made us in his Zelem, meaning image, based on the root, Zel, T-Z-E-L, it's transliterated, and image is Zelem, having an additional mem in it, Zadi Lamed Mem, And so when we have the three letters, Tzelem, it means image, and that's the image in which we are made. But it may be interesting to you to know that the root of that word is Tzel, just Tzadi Lamed, and that means shadow. And so we can view that in a couple of ways, both mystical, both Kabbalistic, and that is that man was made in the shadow of God. That the shadow of God is the core substance of the Tzelem, the image of God in which man was made. And the second way we can look at it is a Kabbalistic way that the sages have brought down to us from time immemorial, and that is that a man's shadow, when one sees it cast upon the ground, is actually seeing the reflection of his Tzelem, his ethereal body, his, in New Age terms, they call it astral body. Okay, but it's his ethereal body, his Tzelem, is his image body. Totally invisible. Only can be seen by the reflection of it cast upon the ground in what we refer to as our shadow. So, Tzelem is based on the ancient root Tzel, which means shadow. Okay, so we talked about this, and that was the first world, of course, is Adam Kadmon. And then below that is Atzilut, the world of nearness, or emanation, consisting of three sephirot. And just bear with me, I'm doing a brief summary of what we talked about in our last meeting. And the first three sephirot are Keter, crown, Chokhmah, wisdom, and Bina, understanding, or we can think of them in terms of creation as being three forces of God. Keter, crown, can be thought of as will. This is the divine will to create, and in which, in potentiality, are all things that ever can or will be created, or have been created and exist no more. For we are taught, and all we have to do is look around us to verify and confirm this experientially, things arise, forms arise, exist for a while, and then subside, go away. This is the eternal cycle of creation, existence, and the end of existence, the falling into nothingness, the return to nothingness, and then recreation. Okay, and then below the world of Atzilut, emanation, and this and speaking in terms of Merkabah mysticism, remember the Merkabah being the chariot that Ezekiel told us about that he saw in the vision, and so the world of Atzilut, which is the topmost of the four supernal worlds that of which mankind even has a hope of visiting. Mankind has no hope of visiting the topmost world, which is Adam Kadmon, because that's the world of the absolute infinite. And the only way mankind can ever get there, if at all, is going to be after the physical death of one's body. But we do have a hope of visiting the four lower worlds, the topmost of which is the world, as I said, of Atzilut, emanation or nearness. Okay, and below that is, and in terms of the Merkabah, and I'm going without notes here, so forgive me if I'm jumping around a little bit. I'm just going by my memory and what's triggered through associations. So it's going to jump around a little bit. But in any event, in terms of the Merkabah mysticism, the chariot mysticism, this would be equivalent to, this world would be equivalent to the king who is sitting upon the throne that's being conveyed by the chariot. Okay, so this would be the world of the holy king. And indeed, the topmost sephira of this world is Keter, which means crown. So that makes sense. There's a correspondence between the later Kabbalah, which is based upon mysticism of the Sefirot, of the ten holy Sefirot in the Etz Chaim, Tree of Life, and the earlier Hekalot or Merkabah mysticism, which is based on the vision of Ezekiel's chariot as a symbol for God's creation. Okay, below the world or universe of Atzilut is the world of Berea, the world of creation. This consists of the second triad in the Sephirotic tree, Chesed, Gevurah, and Teferet. So this is loving kindness, strength. I prefer not to use judgment because there's actually another name for that aspect of the same Sephira, and that's Din, D or Dalet, I-N, and that means judgment or strict judgment, judgment without mercy, without loving kindness. So those two are opposites. They are the two sides of the same coin, so to speak. And they are synthesized in the third Sephira of that triad, which is Teferet, which means beauty. Beauty of what? Well, the other half of the name, Teferet Yisrael, the beauty of Israel, also means Malka Kedisha, means Holy King, Malka Kedisha, HaMashiach, Holy King Messiah. All these things are a part of Teferet. This is the God of Israel. This is the God, the immanent God within us that constitutes what Jung referred to as the Imago Dei. This is the stamp of God upon the souls of the elect. And it's called the God of Israel. So who are the elect? A lot of people hearing this are not going to like hearing this. But what I'm teaching here is Jewish mysticism. And so if you don't agree with this because you're not Jewish, then just let it roll off your back like water off the back of a dog. Or the back of, well, I guess it doesn't roll off, they have to shake it off the back of a duck. There, how's that? Okay, so this is Jewish mysticism, and so you're going to get Jewish mystical teaching here, which is not to say it's the only path, because there are many paths to God, and the key to all of this is to not mistake a path for God itself, because a path is not God. It's an avenue. It's a channel to God, and there are many. Just as Jesus taught in the New Testament, my Father has many mansions. Well, what he's referring to are the various religious containers in which God manifests himself to various people at various times and various places in the world. All right. And what I'm teaching on right now is Kabbalah, which is Jewish mysticism. Okay, so we have the world of Berea. This, in Merkabah mysticism, is equivalent to the throne world. It's called the throne world, the world of the throne on which the Holy King sits. This throne itself is carried on the frame of the chariot, and this is the world of Yetzirah, formation, the world of formation, Yetzirah. This is where things begin. This is where the concepts of the things that God wishes to manifest himself through, because that's what's going on here in all of these worlds. God is manifesting the interior of his mind in the various worlds, in various stages, ending up in the lowest of all the worlds, Asiya, the world of completion. It really means completion, and oftentimes it's said the world of action. And I don't like that because that implies that nothing occurs in the upper worlds. And that's just not true. We know that's not true from all of the manuscripts that have been translated from the various languages of the Kabbalists in the past. The actions of man in the world of completion, the world of Asiya, have a direct impact, negative or positive, on the supernal worlds, the worlds above the world of Asiya or completion. So I prefer to use the terminology Asiya, meaning the world of completion. Why? Because God is building all of these worlds in succession. Not just in the past and it's all done and now we live in the time of the world of Asiya. No. We live in the time of all five worlds because this creation is ongoing and never ending, never ceasing, unceasing. It never stops. It's constant. Indeed, we are taught by our sages that if God, even for an instant, ceased to think of anything in the world, anything that exists, it would cease to exist in that instant. All things that exist, exist because they are in the mind of God. They are in the eye of God. He is observing all things that he has created. This is the concept of this terrifying eye of God that many people see, either in hypnagogic states or in meditative states, deeper trance-like meditative states, or sometimes in dreams. And it's a terrifying thing to behold. But it's the eye of God that is looking at the fruits of his labors. God did not create only to say, well, there, did that, been there, done that, and then leave. I know that's one of the theories of some of the existentialists, some of the modern existentialists, is that God is that, unlike what Nietzsche and some of the others believed that God is dead or never existed in the first place, then some of the more postmodern existentialists say that God created, and I'm searching, of course, for the name of the philosopher and can't find it right now, but in my mind, but say that God created the world, wound it up like a clock, and looked at it for a few moments and said, huh, well, that's really cool. Well, I guess I'm going to go do something else. And then he left. And the world, the universe is just running along like this clock that's been wound up until someday the spring that wound it up loses its energy and it ceases ticking and then we don't know what. Okay, presumably an end of some sort. But I don't believe that way, and I think neither should anyone else. So God has created all of these worlds and is creating them continuously, never ceasing to create them. That's why we see all the time, new forms of life coming into existence. If you look at the fossil record, it's a history of life forms that came into being, existed for a time, and then passed out of existence. This is the way that life is. Being arises out of the oceanic depths of the mind of God, comes to the surface as similar to like an eddy in a current. And we see the evidence of its arising in the form of the circular waves of the eddy in a pool. That's the mind of God. And it exists for a while, and then it goes away, and that eddy changes its form, and it's a little bit different. So it's an ever-continuous arising of life. And that's what these five worlds are all about. Okay, so we just got done discussing the fourth world, the world of Yetzirah. This, in terms of Merkaba mysticism, is the body of the chariot, but it's also known as the angelic world. This is the world that the angels occupy, the Malachim, or the Malachi, depending on how you want, which dialect of Hebrew, Sephardic or Ashkenazi that you wish to use. Okay, so this is the world of angels. And what does that mean? Yes, this means that there are these winged beings, if one wants to envision them that way. Certainly some of them are winged beings, but really they're not beings other than in the sense of archetypal forces. And God tells us through the teachings of other Kabbalists, such as Chaim Luzzatto, that these beings are ministering angels. They are ministers of the laws of the universe that God has set in motion. And this is the angelic world, Yetzirah. the world of formation. Now then, that leaves us with the bottommost world, the fifth level of being of God, the world of Asiya, the world of completion. This has only one sephira, and that is Malkut, which means kingdom. And it means kingdom because God rules over his kingdom, using the metaphor of the times. Almost all the nation states at the time, if not all of them, were kingdoms ruled over by a monarch. And so that was a useful metaphor at the time, and it's still useful to us. And so Asiya is the world of Malkut, the kingdom. What other name do we have for that sephira? I know that you know and are dying to raise your hands, but I've red-dotted you, so that's not going to happen. But I'll say what's on your minds. And that is Shekinah, the Shekinah. And that's the world in which God has exiled his feminine aspect, his Shekinah, his divine feminine other, his divine indwelling presence, his Kavod, his glory. The glory of God is feminine, not masculine. And there's a lesson in that, which we won't go down because I don't want to get distracted here. Okay, so we talked about those five worlds, and then I said that there are five levels of soul, that each one of which corresponds to one of those divine levels of manifestation, those divine universes or worlds. And I talked about them, and I'm not going to name them off now for lack of time. I want to bring out another subject, and we'll talk, because I'm going to talk more about them, each one of them individually, but probably not today, but later. There are these five levels of soul what I want to do, though, is I want to look at an aspect of this. Why is it that we want, or why do we need, let's say that we need to know or want to know, but why? Why do we want or need to know the details of the levels of soul, the characteristics of the five parts of theme? These are the hidden countenances I talked about in our last session, into which the ten holy sephirot are divided. And the five... the powers and wonders of the five divine worlds. Why do we want or need to know any of those details? And I hope I stay online. I look out the window because I hear a roar and there's a huge downpour of rain that is so thick I can't see. I can barely see the trees 200 feet away from me. So we'll stay on as long as possible. God willing, we won't have to go off the air here. All right, why? Why do we study these things? Well, there are two main types of people who follow after God, who seek to know about God. You can divide them into two categories. And the reasons why each of them need to know these things for each category are quite different. The first category is the theoretical intellectual person, the scholar. For this person, intellectual knowledge of the nature of God and the structure of the universe is sufficient. For that person, theoretical Kabbalah provides an intellectual form of devakut. In other words, studying about what I just got done explaining to you and discussing, the five universes, the five worlds, and the manner in which God came down and the paths that connect all of the 10 sephirot, the 22 paths, and which are the 22 letters of the alphabet, the sacred tongue, that in studying these things and seeing and understanding how they interact with each other, that creates in the mind of that type of person, that scholar, a form of intellectual knowledge. And by bringing God, that knowledge of God, into that person's mind, then there is a form of intellectual devakut. A union of the human mind takes place with the divine mind through the facility of words and symbols. Okay? And that kind of study of Kabbalah is fine. That's theoretical Kabbalah. There's nothing wrong with that. And I would venture to say that type of study of Kabbalah represents by far the vast majority of Kabbalists. You'll see why in a moment. Now, the second type of person is the practical person who seeks a direct experience of God. Not an intellectual experience, but maybe does want that intellectual experience, but that's insufficient. For this person, intellectual knowledge or wisdom, chokmah, is insufficient. This person needs, not just wants, but needs to experience and feel God within his or her heart. For this person, practical or prophetic Kabbalah, this is another branch of Kabbalah, provides a Gnostic based on not Gnosticism in terms of Christian Gnosticism that existed in the first 300 years, 300 to 400 years of the Common Era. I'm not talking about that. When I say the term in this specific context, I'm referring to Gnosis, Gnostic as it describes Gnosis, Da'at. The Hebrew word for Gnosis or knowing is Da'at, and it is the hidden Sefirot that is just below Keter in the center column, below Keter and just above Tiferet. Okay, this is in a form of intuitive or spiritual devakut, as opposed to intellectual. This represents a union of the divine soul with the human soul through the facility of a linkage between the human spirit, or Tzelem, that I talked about at the beginning of this year, with the Ruach HaKodesh, the divine spirit that resides in one's heart, the one that does not reside in one's heart, but which can be drawn down from the upper worlds at the world of where? Well, it's residing in the world of Malkut, because it's in the form of Shekinah, that it can be drawn down into one's heart. The Shekinah, the Shekinah, as it's sometimes pronounced, can be drawn into the heart of the spiritual seeker. Okay, so we have two distinct paths offered by Kabbalah to the mystic, the result of which is union with God, devakut. One in which we learn about the paths, the gates, and the palaces of God intellectually, and the other in which we actually change our level of consciousness and journey upward through them, experiencing the divine worlds as a traveler. All right, I hope I haven't beaten this to death and made you bored. But I think it's important to know these distinctions. And this is why we need to learn, why we must learn these details, which can be very complicated and which some teachers don't attempt to teach because they are afraid that people will leave them, that their students will grow frustrated with the level of detail and leave them and say, oh, I can't understand a thing that person's talking about. Well, my view is if a person's in that mode of thinking, then they shouldn't be here. They're not ready for this anyway. It's all right for them to leave. I would rather have one student who is dedicated to achieving in their lifetime at least one experience of devakut or enlightenment or unio mystica, mystical union with Adonai, our Lord, than hundreds of students who are not truly dedicated to manifesting God in their hearts and in their lives. Because that one person will achieve great things for God. Those hundreds will just waste their time and mine. Now then, along those lines, about how it is that one can become a traveler, not just a person who contemplates in his mind the diagrams and says, huh, that's interesting. And that's all the deeper that one digs. So if we want to go deeper, we have to practice. We have to not just learn. Remember the five stages in learning that we're taught by the Spanish Kabbalist, I forget his name now, from the 11th century. He said the first stage is silence, the second stage is listening, the third stage is remembering, the fourth is doing, and the fifth is teaching. Okay, well, we've got to first be quiet, and then we have to listen. And then we have to remember what we heard, what was given to us by our teachers, and by the Ruach HaKodesh, divine inspiration, the Bakol, the voice of the daughter, the voice of the all. Voice of the daughter being what? The Shekinah. Okay? So we have to remember what's revealed to us. And of course, we have to have a tremendous amount of kavana, or intention, to will ourselves to learn these things. We have to have perseverance. We have to have focus and concentration. Okay? But then we have to do. And when we begin to do, not just learn, but to do, that means to practice, then that's when we step from the one path of theoretical Kabbalah into the stream, the much smaller stream, perhaps only 10% as wide, but oh, so much deeper, of prophetic Kabbalah, practical Kabbalah. These are people who have to actually experience God, to reach out and touch God, and to feel God's touch in return. Okay, so along those lines, about what are the techniques, how do we do this, I'm going to read a short passage from written by Rabbi Chaim Vital, the foremost disciple to and scribe to Rabbi Yitzhak Luria, the 16th century Kabbalist known as the Arizal. And Rabbi Chaim Vital writes in his introduction to Shari Kedusha, which means gates of holiness, he says, thus says the young Chaim, son of his honor, Rabbi Yosef Vital, may the remembrance of the righteous be for a blessing, I have seen the sons of ascent. I have seen the sons of ascent. And they are few. Now, that's what I just talked about. I'm going to break in and have some commentary on what I'm saying here. He has seen the sons of ascent. What he's talking about are those who practice prophetic Kabbalah. And he says, they are few. That's what I just said. That the stream of prophetic Kabbalah is much narrower than that of theoretical Kabbalah. Much easier just to learn about things than it is to change one's life and begin to do things, to practice things, for the purpose of ascending the ladder of God. Okay, Jacob's ladder. Okay? He goes on, he says, I have seen the sons of ascent, and they are few. They greatly desire to ascend, and the ladder is hidden from their eyes. They contemplate the books of the ancients to look for and thus find the paths of life, the way therein which they should go, and the action that when performed will elevate their souls to its supernal source and to bond with him, capitalized, may he be blessed, for he is the eternal completion. Now, who is he talking about here that the sons of ascent seek to elevate their souls to, which is the source? Who is this, he is the eternal completion, that's the supernal source with which they wish, from which they came and to which they wish to return and bond What does bond mean? It means devakut, right? Clinging to, union with. So he's talking about devakut here. The rising up of souls up the ladder, the spiritual ladder, for the purpose of returning to the soul's source and not joining the soul forever as one would do after one has completed one's incarnations, the cycle of Gilgal, but to bond for the moment, to join for the moment, unite. That's devakut that he's talking about here. Well, who is this eternal completion? Well, that is the Holy One, blessed be He. Okay, the Holy One, blessed be He. That is the God of Israel. Joined, Zeronpin, joined with Arikanpin, a level of complexity I'm not going to go into right now. But it's God. It's the immanent God, the personal God. He goes on in his introduction. This is similar to the prophets who spent all their days bonded with their Creator. And through the intermediary of this bonding with God, now he tells us, see, that this eternal completion is God. The divine spirit, Ruach HaKodesh, dwelt upon them to instruct them in which path dwells light, to radiate their eyes in the secrets of Torah. Okay, number of things I want to say about this sentence. So what he's saying is that the current sons of ascent wish to do a thing that is similar to what the prophets did. The prophets spent all their days bonded with their Creator. That means that the prophets achieved and maintained devakut their entire lives. This is what made them prophets, divine prophets, not lower level prophecy. I'm talking about the highest level of prophecy. And he says, it is through this intermediary of bonding with God, okay, that means devakut. So it's through the intermediary of devakut that the divine spirit, the Ruach HaKodesh, this would be the prophetic inspiration, came upon those prophets to instruct them in which path dwells light. Now we know that we have many paths, at least 22 paths, but in reality there's many more than that, because there's a complete replica of the Eskayim, the Tree of Life, that has the 10 Holy Sephirot and the 22 paths of the sacred letters in each one of those 10 Sephirot. So there's many, many, many paths. Not all of them have light. Light does not dwell in all those paths. So the prophet and the mystic can waste much time and energy in going down dead-end paths and risk great danger to themselves in doing so. So it was the Ruach HaKodesh, the divine spirit, that informed them through divine inspiration in which path dwells light, for the purpose of radiating their eyes in the secrets of Torah. Now, what does that mean? That's a really strange term. To radiate their eyes in the secrets of Torah. Well, the second part, the secrets of Torah, isn't too hard to understand. That's what we're all looking for all the time. But to radiate their eyes. What he is saying here, Chaim Vital, is that the prophets came to understand the secrets of Torah. And it resulted in light radiating out from their eyes. The light operated in her eyes just the opposite of the manner which modern physicists talk about. They talk about photons coming into our eyes through the pupils of our eyes and striking the retina, which causes a neurochemical transformation, which sends a neural signal up to the visual cortex. What he's saying here is what my teacher taught me before, that it's not the light that goes into one's eyes that matters. It's the light of the Spirit of the Lord that comes into our minds as a result of Ruach HaKodesh that then travels down those neural pathways and comes out of our eyes. And it also comes out in the form of a glow on one's face. It's recorded, remember, that Moshe's face, when he came down from the mountain, glowed so much that they had to cover his face. All right. I'm going to move on here because I don't want to run on too long. Okay. In fact, I'm going to check our time here right now. Okay, 40 minutes, so I can finish this up in about 5 minutes. All right. Now, he says, as King David, upon him be peace, said, open my eyes and I will understand the wonders of your Torah. In Psalm 119, verse 18. And then he goes on to say, and to guide them in the straight path to go to the settled place reserved for them alongside the sons of ascent. Okay. So this light that radiates from the eyes of the prophet is used to guide them in the straight path to go to the settled place reserved for them alongside the sons of ascent. Now, what that's talking about is in the afterlife. Olam Haba, the world to come. Olam Haba. And we are taught that the righteous, for the righteous, the light that created the world is reserved and set aside for that place reserved for them in the upper worlds. This is the place where the light of creation is stored for the righteous. It's the place where the light of creation that came through the eyes of the prophets shined to guide them on a straight path to go to that place. This is the place where we can be guided to as righteous people, as B'nai Hashem, as sons of God, and sons and daughters of God. I'll go on here. After them came the original pious ones, who were called Perashim, Pharisees. They requested to go in the paths of the prophets and to be similar to them and to dwell in narrow caves and deserts. And they separated from the ways of men. Among them were those Perashim, who in their homes acted similar to those who went into the desert. Each day and night, continuously, they were not silent from praising their Creator in study of Torah or with the songs of King David, upon him be peace. So how did the Pharisees each day and night continuously praise their Creator? Two ways. In the study of Torah, which is what we're doing right now, and in reciting and singing the songs of King David, the Psalms. Okay. And then of this it says, these especially make the heart rejoice until their thoughts bind with power and strong passion with these supernal lights. They maintain this degree, referring now to the Pharisees, all their days until they ascended to the level of the divine spirit, and they prophesied and did not cease. So first we had the prophets, and when the days of the prophets, the era of the prophets ended, we had the Pharisees who replaced the higher levels of attainment of soul, of consciousness attained by the prophets, and they were not vouchsafed. After the end of the age of prophets, when that came to an end, that would never be granted again to ordinary men. God stopped calling prophets from among ordinary men and converting them into prophets. But instead, what the Pharisees did was they achieved this level periodically and fell back from it periodically, but they kept re-achieving that level of prophecy, which is a lower level of prophecy, but still higher than ordinary consciousness. And they did this through constantly praising their Creator in the study of Torah and by singing and reciting the Psalms of King David. Okay, now the final paragraph. It is not found the manners of their paths and their deeds, how these holy ones serve Blessed Hashem, even more so us. So it's saying here that no one knows for sure how the Pharisees served the Blessed Holy One, or the manner of their paths and the manner of their deeds. It goes on, therefore have the hearts been lessened, and also the knowledge of the generations who followed them. Thus the masters of the divine spirit came to an end. Baal Ruach HaKodesh, the masters, Baalei, masters, plural, Ruach, spirit, Kadesh, divine spirit, came to an end. So he's saying there are no longer any masters of the divine spirit. We were left without comfort. We were abandoned to suffering. We are thirsty and hungry to such a point that there has arisen despair in the hearts of those men who seek this wondrous wisdom. All visions are blocked because it is not written in any book the nature of the practices used to draw close and come near to the inner holiness. So, all of that summed up says that the ability to achieve these high levels of consciousness necessary to have devakut with God and receive Ruach HaKodesh, that the methods of attaining them have been lost, and that people nowadays seek in books, in ancient manuscripts, in vain to find them. Now that's what Rabbi Chaim Vital said. Now, notwithstanding that, his statement to that effect, that the nature of the practices used to draw close and come near to the inner holiness, devakut, is not written in any book. Okay, notwithstanding that, there are three, and only three that we know of at the current time, because there are thousands of Kabbalistic manuscripts that have not yet been translated. Okay, but at the current time, there are only three we know of that openly disclose these techniques of prophetic Kabbalah. The first one is Sha'arei Tzedek, meaning the Gates of Righteousness, written by Natan ben Saadia Harar, who was a direct disciple of Avraham Abulafia. The first Kabbalist to write down the methods of permuting and combining the holy letters of the Aleph Bet. Okay. The second is Salam Aliyah, meaning Ladder of Ascent, written by Yehuda Albertini. This is not yet published in English, so it's inaccessible to me and anyone who's not Hebrew, very high-level Hebrew reader. But this book is known as the most technical and deep book on the subject of prophetic Kabbalah, of the methods, the techniques. Okay, and now here's the one that I just love. Part 4, the third book, is part 4 of Rabbi Chaim Vital's Sha'arei Kedusha, the Gates of Holiness. Wait a minute. If you've been paying attention, you might be saying now, wait a minute. Didn't you just read us this introduction to Chaim Vital's Sha'arei Kedusha, the Gates of Holiness? And in that introduction, didn't he say that the methods and techniques whereby one can engage in prophetic Kabbalah to achieve union with our Creator that doesn't exist in any written books? Yes, I did. I just read that to you. And yes, that's what he said. But in that very same book, he wrote down, he was divided into four parts. The first three parts were of one size, and the fourth part specifically concerned these techniques. But he made them forbidden to the average student of Kabbalah. He said that they should be kept by the masters of ascent. Okay, the masters of the ladder of ascent. Only for select students. And in fact, when his papers were published by his son, the publisher of Shari Kedusha came to the fourth part and excised it and would not publish it. I'm not saying that his son wanted it published and there was a conflict, I don't know. But the fact is that the publisher did not publish it, and it has been not published for these hundreds of years until in the last decade. And it has just now been made available in an English translation. And I'm not going to tell you what that is. I don't have it, and I don't consider myself ready for it. And so I'm not going to reveal that. If you want to go do a bunch of research and get it, you can, and get yourself into all kinds of trouble, and I'm going to say actual danger for your mind, for the soundness of your mind and your soul, because we are taught by the sages that a person who attempts to climb the ladder by forbidden paths, paths for which he is not adequately prepared, faces insanity, madness. Well, it's just like the four who entered into the garden, of which only Rabbi Akiva entered or exited with his mind in sound condition. One left as a heretic, one died on the spot, and the other left with a broken mind. And these are great masters, great Kabbalists, great rabbis of the first century. So if they can't handle it, and I don't think I can handle it, then I caution you. All right, that's all the more that we're going to talk about today. I'm going to get back into the more of the details on Monday of the five levels of soul, each one of which corresponds to one of the five worlds of universes. And within those five levels of soul, the five grades of light. All right, so I'll be talking about that in the next session. In the meantime, this class will be rebroadcast at 10 p.m. Eastern Time tonight, 7 p.m. Pacific, and our next meeting will be on this upcoming Monday. And in the meantime, I ask that God give His blessing to you, to bless you in all ways and keep you from all harm or misfortune. And may you remember God at least twice a day, and in doing so, you bring Him into your consciousness and have the opportunity to know Him and for Him to know you. And may you go from strength to strength. Be well. Zygesund.